Hello, and welcome to the Wicked True Crime Stories podcast, the show that will have the hairs on the back of your neck stand up. I'm your host, Alyssa.
And I'm your host, Miranda. Our information was gathered from several sources. The sources will be linked to our podcast tab on our website.
All right, you ready to start the story?
I think so.
Okay. John Price, a family man, 44 years old, with two children and a common law wife, didn't show up to work March 1st, 2000. His neighbors grew concerned because he normally is up by 6 a.m. headed to work. He was a very hard worker, and this was abnormal for him. It was so out of character that even his neighbors were worried and went to his house and knocked on his bedroom window to wake him up. One neighbor went to the front door and noticed a small amount of blood on it. They called law enforcement and police made entry into the house through the rear door and immediately observed what appeared to be human skin hanging from a hook.
Oh my god.
Sounds like a nightmare, right?
Yeah.
Further into the house, within eyesight, they found the victim's decapitated body on the lounge room floor. They found Price's wife, Catherine Knight, snoring loudly in a comatose condition on a double bed at the end of the house. Knight was taken to the hospital by ambulance.
According to the article Catherine Mary Knight, Australia's Hannah Lecter, by Paul B. Kidd, at around 10 a.m. the same morning, a detective had arrived on scene. The detective explains the layout of the house and its surroundings in his report. The detective, Anthony Peter Musio, reported that he was walking in the backyard and observed what appeared to be cooked meat on the back lawn.
Like barbecue meat or...
I'm hoping so. Sounds like a mystery.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
And just to clarify, was it Peter Anthony Musio or...
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Peter Anthony Musio. So as he walked into the entrance, he immediately saw the skin of the victim hanging in the doorway, from the top of the doorway to the floor. He said, quote, "Looking through this doorway into the lounge room, I could see a headless and skinless human body," unquote.
Wow.
Yeah. As Musio walked further into the house, he saw an extreme amount of blood pooled on the floor. And based on how Musio was explaining the scene, it sounds like it was just a total bloodbath.
I can imagine.
Yeah. Musio then goes into some detail about the layout of the house. He talks about clothing items that were draped over some dining room chairs. He noticed blood stains on the shoulder of a blue shirt that was draped over one of the chairs. Musio also mentions that he saw various medication bottles that were empty or partially empty. I'm not really sure what the medications have to do with it. Maybe they thought the killer forced Price to take them, or maybe this was why Knight was unconscious. So in the kitchen, there was an electric cooktop that had a cooking pot on it. Want to take a wild guess about what was in the cooking pot?
I'll let you tell the listeners.
Okay. So, remember when you had said that Price's headless and skinless body was on the lounge room floor?
Yeah.
Well, Musio found a skinned human head in the cooking pot.
All right. Wow.
Yeah. I guess they figured out where his head was.
Right.
A blood trail from the hanging skin actually led to the cooking pot. Do you want to take a guess at what else was in that cooking pot?
More body parts, maybe?
Probably. But there were actually also vegetables.
Okay, so she was making, like, stew.
Like, yeah, basically. And it was actually still warm, like it had just been cooked. And there was also meat that looked similar to the cooked meat on the backyard lawn.
Okay, so, like, probably not steak. Or pork chops.
Probably not steak or pork chops.
Okay.
Yeah. The detective noted that a skilled person would have had to make the cuts on Price. Someone who has skinned things before.
Interesting.
Yeah. The detective talks about Price's body again, and this is what he says. Quote, "The body was virtually devoid of skin and flesh, exposing the muscles and some organs," unquote. Murderpedia wrote, quote, according to forensic pathologist Dr. Timothy Lyons, who performed the autopsy, the whole procedure would have taken about 40 minutes, unquote.
Wow, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
That's a long time to be doing something like that to someone that you supposedly loved at some point.
Right.
You married him, you know? That's crazy.
Yeah. And it was also revealed that he was stabbed over 37 times.
So she was, like, pissed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A note was left on a cabinet that said, quote, time got you back, Jonathan, for raping my daughter. You to Beck for Ross, for little John, unquote. I'm not going to read the other part of the note because of how inappropriate it is. Anyone who's curious can find the other part of the note on the links that will be attached to our website.
So I noticed, like, just by reading this, and our listeners will be able to see it when they go to the link, but she spells things wrong. Like, she spells Jonathan wrong.
Mm-hmm.
She spells it J-O-H-A-T-H-O-N.
Mm-hmm.
And then for raping, she spells it rapping.
Yeah.
And daughter is D-O-U-T-E-R.
Right.
So, like, it makes me wonder, is she misspelling things and, you know, like, her grammar is kind of messed up because
right.
she had just killed her husband?
Yeah.
Or because, you know, she doesn't have a lot of education? Or going back to what we talked about before with the medications that the detective
right.
found?
Yeah.
Did she, like, take them and that's maybe what's going on?
Right, she was writing the note, like, as she was...
Like, going into that comatose state.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that's it.
It's crazy.
So, Knight was questioned, but she was adamant that she does not recall the events of that night. On March 6, 2000, she was charged with the murder of Price while she was in a psychiatric hospital.
Oh.
Knight pled guilty in October of 2001, and during this... court-appointed psychiatrists said Knight was sane during the time of the murder. Not insane, but sane.
Sane.
So she knew what she was doing,
yeah.
And she knew that it was wrong, is
right.
basically what they're saying. Due to her pleading guilty, the family did not have to sit through a trial listening to all of the horrible details of the case.
Well, that's a good thing.
Right, they didn't have to see all of the evidence that was brought in, probably photographs.
Right, of their
hear,
dad.
Yeah, hear what they what the detectives and arriving officers saw.
Right.
Knight was sentenced to life in prison without possibility of parole.
Well, good.
According to Psychology Today, quote, she appealed in 2006 against the weight of the judgment. The appeal was rejected by Justices Peter McClellan, Michael Adams, and Megan Latham in the New South Wales Court of Criminal Appeal. Justice McClellan wrote in his judgment, this was an appalling crime, almost beyond contemplation in a civilized society, unquote.
I mean, he's not wrong.
Right. Yeah, definitely not.
I'm wondering why she did it.
Well, based on what I found from Psychology Today, some believe that it could have been a revenge killing. She may have killed Price to get back at his children, his son especially, since she accused him of sexually assaulting her daughter. According to Murderpedia, these claims were baseless.
Great. So, what exactly happened that night?
Well, Price finally had enough of Knight and went to get an apprehended violence order against Knight, which I'm guessing is kind of like a protection order?
Right, like a...
So, yeah, so, yeah. you know, if she shows up, he can call the police and she's not supposed to be there.
Right.
Right. Later that night, after he went and got that, she went back to their house. I guess she, like, got into the shower, took a shower, then got into bed with him, and they had sex. Supposedly, after that, she killed him.
Interesting conclusion to a frisky night, I guess.
Right. According to Psychology Today, during her trial, three consultant psychiatrists said Knight had borderline personality disorder and would always be a danger to others. Miranda, do you want to talk a little bit about borderline personality disorder since you kind of know more about that?
Absolutely. So, according to the Mayo Clinic quote, with borderline personality disorder, you have an intense fear of abandonment or instability, and you may have difficulty tolerating being alone. Yet inappropriate anger, impulsiveness, and frequent mood swings may push others away, even though you want to have loving and lasting relationships, unquote. You know, with the line of work that I do, working in the mental health community field, I work with a lot of people who have borderline personality disorder, and it can be really tricky at times, especially when someone with this disorder is in crisis. A lot of times they tend to push everybody away because they do have this intense fear of abandonment, and they think by pushing everybody away, it'll, you know, make that less of a impact on them. People with borderline personality disorder see things in absolute extremes as well. So the lows are low and the highs are high, so it can make life pretty difficult. There are also pretty intense mood swings that happen. You can go from one mood to the other in a drop of a hat, which is where like some of the inappropriate anger could come from. And this can make things really complicated, especially for people in close relationships to those with the disorder.
Knight was born in northwestern New South Wales in October 24th, 1955. Knight had several siblings, including a twin sister. According to Murderpedia, quote, from all accounts, young Catherine was a loving little girl who was kind to animals, and her only brush with retribution was as a 13-year-old when she appeared before the children's court on a minor charge and received a good behavior bond, unquote. So, Miranda, they talk about when she was younger, she was a loving little girl and was kind to animals. Do you not usually see borderline personality disorder in younger children?
Not typically. Most disorders that have a pretty severe impact like that aren't diagnosed till later in life, because with kids, they handle anger differently, they handle different emotions differently, and if you diagnosed a kid who, say, was having really severe outbursts at home, but their home life was not very good, they had abusive parents, whatnot, so that's an environmental thing that could explain that.
Yeah.
So, usually once people are, you know, an adult or a young adult into their, like, mid-20s is usually when you can get, like, an official diagnosis, because those behaviors can't be explained as, like, a child, like, outburst. So
because she was, you know, said to be a loving little girl who was kind to animals when she was younger,
right,
she might have actually not had, like, borderline personality disorder till she was older and when all this violent stuff started happening.
Yeah.
So when Knight was 16, she joined her father in the family business boning out carcasses, which I think means that she worked at, like, a butcher shop, basically. Yeah,
perfect job for a 16-year-old.
She showed a peculiar interest in the other areas of the job. Specifically, her coworkers supposedly mentioned that they thought it was strange how she would stand and watch them cutting the necks of the animals to kill them. They brushed it off as her just watching other parts of the job.
I mean, you gotta know all the moving parts of your job, I suppose.
Right, yeah, and I can see that. I guess, really, you'd have to be there and see, like, you know, what
the
is
process.
She, yeah. Well, no, what is she doing? Like, is she, you know what I mean? Is she really there to learn? Or does she have some sort
she
of
practicing?
Weird obsession with it? Yeah.
Right.
So she was also known to challenge anyone to armed combat with a knife to sort of matter out.
I mean, go for it, I guess.
Yeah. No one messed with her, obviously.
I bet.
If she was, you know, up for doing that, even at work, no one really wanted to mess with her.
I bet. So, David Kellett was the first person to fall into Knight's really vicious trap. David was a 22-year-old truck driver at the time, and Knight was 18 when she moved in with him. A year after meeting, they were married, and rumor has it, Knight strangled David the night of their wedding.
So that's like a red flag if I've ever seen one.
Yeah.
The night that you get married, yeah, should be the happiest night of your life, and she strangles him.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, well, you would think your wedding night would consist of other things, but
right,
strangulation, I guess, is her thing. A couple of years later, Knight and David actually had their first child. David left Knight for another woman after having enough of Knight's violent behavior. So I'm guessing it was the start of a pretty vicious cycle. And actually, in a vengeful twist, Knight takes their baby down to the railroad tracks and leaves the baby on the tracks as a train was fast approaching.
What?
Yeah. Luckily, the baby started crying and a man heard the baby and got the child off the tracks.
Yeah, could you imagine if he hadn't heard the baby cry?
Right.
Like if the baby wasn't crying?
Right. That would have been it.
Yeah, the baby would have been killed.
Yeah. And later that day, that same day that she put her baby down on the tracks, she took an axe from someone's yard and began swinging it around, threatening to kill several people. The cops were able to apprehend her, and she was taken to a hospital where she was diagnosed with postnatal depression, or the term now would be...
postpartum.
Yeah.
Depression.
Postpartum. Yeah. She was released from the hospital, and Knight wasn't even close to done with her acts of violence. A few days after leaving her baby on the train tracks and swinging the axe, she demanded that a woman who she knew take her to David's car. This is the ex-husband. While she was making her demands, she slashed the woman in the face. The woman was able to escape when Knight and her like pulled into a petrol station. Police got a frantic call from the woman, and when they arrived, they saw Knight holding a young boy by the shirt with a knife still in her hand.
Wow, that's terrifying.
Yeah, I think knives are her go-to.
Well, it makes sense if she worked in a butcher shop.
That
you
is
know.
True. Police were able to get her away from the boy, and she was not hurt, and he wasn't either. She once again was taken into custody, and this time she was taken to a psychiatric hospital, and her daughter was left in the care of Knight's parents.
David was a lucky guy, because one day he returned home and Knight had packed all of her stuff and left for Aberdeen to return to her family's farm. That was probably like the best day of his life. Oh my god, she's gone.
Right.
Knight found yet another victim when she got into a relationship with Dave Saunders. She was physically abusive with him, which is not surprising.
Right.
She punched and kicked him, hit him over the head with an iron, and stabbed him with scissors.
Gotcha.
Knight and Dave also had a child together. Knight left Dave and shortly after found another man. Knight cheated on this guy, then left him after 3 years for Price.
Gotcha.
So, people really liked Price and thought that he was a great guy. Price had 3 children, 2 of which lived with him, the ones that we spoke about earlier.
Right.
And the other lived with his ex. The relationship started out well, like all the other ones Knight got into. She cooked for him, drove him to work, helped around the house, was nice at first, then things changed.
Yeah, she cooked her husband.
Right. So, this is how it goes with abusive relationships. At first, they seem like this perfect person who could do no wrong. Then, of course, the arguments and the accusations start. And yeah, sure, couples have arguments, right?
Right.
But it starts to get worse. They break up, then the sorries and I love yous, and it just becomes a cycle.
Right.
And there's another fight, things get worse, and at this point, it gets physical,
mm-hmm.
if they're the physically abusive type of person, right? And then this cycle doesn't end until someone dies,
right,
or is severely hurt, or someone decides, I'm finally going to leave,
right?
So I can speak to this cycle because I see it a lot at work. It truly does exist, and sometimes it takes a while for people to get out of it.
Yeah.
And that's why it's a cycle. Price's final move to get out of the relationship was getting that protection order against her. He tried, but could not get away from Knight's deadly grip.
Which is how it goes most of the time for relationships like this.
Yeah, yeah, it takes a lot for people to get out of abusive relationships, and
it's hard, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, what are your thoughts on this case?
So, I think the best word to describe this case is wow. It's crazy. The entire thing from start to finish is insane. I'm pretty sure my jaw dropped like 30 times. It's really sad that she abused so many men, and she ended up having children that were around to also experience some of that abuse, because I'm sure, you know, witnessing that kind of thing was hard.
Oh yeah, definitely. And you know, I've seen that at work too. The children usually are terrified, and they're upset. Like, they're, you know, this is happening to their parents.
Yeah. And another really sad thing is no one really did anything when she was showing these, like, abnormal signs. Like, I know in the beginning, you know, her family and people said that she was loving to animals and stuff like that. And she was a loving girl. But the butcher shop thing probably was a decent red flag that people, you know,
they noticed her strange behavior.
Right. And I think possibly, I don't know entirely, but it could have possibly been prevented if she had gotten help during her younger years. Not being, like, diagnosed with anything, but, you know, the going to jail at 13 or, you know, getting released on good behavior and stuff like that. And then the butcher shop thing, you know, gotten her into therapy or on medications or whatnot could have possibly helped prevent the situation. Or once she was an adult, when she first met her first husband, she could have been diagnosed and helped, you know, then. So, but overall, I think the entire thing is absolutely messed up.
Yeah, it is messed up. And like I said before, an absolute nightmare for, you know, the arriving police officers that had to see that horrible scene, and the detectives, and I'm sure the family, even if they didn't see what happened, they know what happened. They've heard it, you know. And that's, I just can't even imagine. And the other thing I wanted to mention was that it is really sad, like you said, that she abused so many men. And even in today's world, men don't always want to report abuse from, you know, a woman. And it really doesn't get reported a lot. And people don't look at it the same as they would look at a woman getting abused. It's becoming more acceptable, you know, for men to be like, I understand that I'm being abused and that they need help. But it's sad because probably back even in 2000, it wasn't something that was talked about a lot. So, so I guess from reading all these articles and the research that I've done, no one really knows if she ate any parts of Price. What do you think? I think she did.
Yeah.
She was willing to do all of that horrible stuff. I'm guessing also eating him after cooking him up wasn't a far stretch for her.
You know, and I wouldn't put it past her. She sat there for 40 minutes, according to the pathologist, and skinned him from head to toe and then hung it up, which, A, has to be a meticulous thing if you can hang up somebody's skin, and number two, like, she put his head in a pot.
Yeah, she, like, made a dinner, and she was making that dinner for
the kids.
His kids.
Yeah.
For revenge, so, like...
Like, what if they...
It doesn't seem that far-fetched for her to actually be a cannibal, if she thinks to do stuff like that, you know?
Right. Yeah. I wouldn't say it was a stretch, for sure.
All right. That about wraps up this case, and I have to say, this has probably been our most interesting one so far.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I won't say favorite one, because I obviously love all the shows we have done.
Yeah.
Anyways, there is a link to some photographs involving this case, and they will also be linked to our website. The link is from Murderpedia. They are not gory or inappropriate. They just give you an idea of who Knight and Price were, and kind of, they show some photos of, like, the house.
Right.
And the layout of the house and stuff, so you kind of understand the story a little better.
Right. And it kind of shocked me when I looked at those photos, and I saw the two of them, because she looks like a normal person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we've said this in our other episodes, but the monster doesn't always look like a monster.
Yeah.
It can look like an average, regular person. It isn't, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to look all creepy and like, yeah, that person definitely murders people in the basement. It could be someone that looks like a normal family person.
Right.
If you or someone else is in an abusive relationship, please seek help. Report the abuse to law enforcement or call 1-800-799-7233. This is the number for the National Domestic Violence Hotline. Okay, Wicked listeners, as always, leave us feedback, comments, and questions. And if you want them shared on our podcast, we will do that. Listen in next Monday for another Wicked True Crime Story.